Hello, we're here to talk to Alexey Savatyev, senior architect from Microsoft, about the topic of security in Windows Azure as it applies to provisioning and billing solution, which is a open source solution available for Windows Azure for the people who are interested in billing and provisioning and billing software on top of Windows Azure. Here you go. Here's Alexey Savatyev.
Hi, everyone. My name is Alexey. I'm going to talk about security and provisioning and billing system that was created here in our team to assist ISVs in developing provisioning and billing solutions essentially on top of Windows Azure platform. It is applicable to pretty much any company that wants to create software as a service offering on top of Windows Azure platform and wants to provision developer packages or its own packages and bill its users based on their own utilization of Windows Azure services and resources. So essentially, this system serves as a proxy between Windows Azure platform and end user packages that are running as applications in Windows Azure platform, be it developer-created applications or an ISV-created applications that were customized for developers. And I'm going to talk about certain security aspects in building such solutions. The main tool that is used in building such solutions is essentially Azure Service Management API. That's pretty much the only way to program against Windows Azure platform internals. As you know, you can create .NET applications and Java applications and PHP applications on top of Windows Azure and put them in Windows Azure, but when it comes to the internals of the platform itself, that is the guts of the system that control your packages, the only way to do it right now is Service Management API. And in order to utilize it, you essentially need to have a so-called API certificate. And throughout my presentation, I'm actually showing manual operations that you would only need to perform using a special icon, the hand icon, and the rest of the operations you could do programmatically using Service Management API or other APIs. So there is no support for billing API yet. Essentially, everything that has to do with billing in Windows Azure platform, you have to do manually through another portal, not even through Windows Azure portal. The portal is called MockP, Microsoft Online Services Customer Portal. Separate URL for that. There's the API certificates that I'm talking about. They're typical X509 certificates that can be generated by the developers and uploaded ahead of time through the Windows Azure portal so that the service provider or the ISV could essentially control that deployment on behalf of its users if it's a multi-tenant application. The API certificates themselves, so there's X509 certificates, so with private and public key pair. You can generate them in multiple ways. So you can use IaaS Management Console server certificate section of it, or if you have Windows SDK installed, you could use command line tool called MakeCert. And I'm actually listing one of the examples of MakeCert syntax that you could use to generate such a certificate and put it in your certificate store so that your applications could actually have access to it. There are a few considerations that you need to take into account while doing so. My store that has the certificates is essentially the only place where your certificates can be visible by the applications. But not every application can see the My Store. The applications that are running under different identities, they essentially need to have special permissions for your certificate stores. Because, for example, if that application is a web application and you're performing these operations on behalf of the users that are logged into your web server, the IIS is going to be using a completely different identity than the one that was originally used for putting this certificate into this store. So therefore, there are a few things that you need to take into account. You might install the certificate into specific user certificate store. So for example, certain IIS user certificate store, that is not recommended. You can change application user identity to administrative. For example, add your application identity into administrative group and give them access to your certificate that way. That is only good for development, really. It is not a secure way. Or you could use certificates that were generated by trusted certificate authority versus self-signed certificates. Either way, there's also a section in Azure portal where you add the public portion of the certificate that you essentially need to use to communicate with service management API in Azure. So the private and public key pair is going to be installed on your local development box and or whatever server that you're using to communicate with Azure portal. And in Azure portal, there will only be a public key that is used for that kind of secure communication. The typical configuration is presented on this slide. You essentially need to refer to your certificate by its thumbprint, and you can get that from the properties of the certificates once it's installed. And you have to also specify the algorithm that was used to create the certificate and encode it. You can put this configuration into web config or app config section of your application configuration file. Another mechanism that is used in this kind of applications is Access Control Service, which is a part of Windows Azure platform itself. It's part of App Fabric offering. It is a claims-based access control service for services and resources. You can essentially protect your resources in Azure, including the operations that are provided by billing and provisioning system that you're building through ACS. And its key capabilities include auth, wrap, and SWAT wrappers that you can essentially build to make requests for the tokens, and you can receive the information from ACS in standardized way through OAuth protocols. It is a low friction way to onboard new clients. You can add and delete users from it without affecting the rest of the system. It integrates with Active Directory Federation Services 2.0 very well, so you could essentially, without moving any domain users, still use the domain user identities to access your protected resources. It is actually one of the best standards-based tools for managing permissions within provisioning and billing solutions because it's already there. It's part of Windows Azure platform, and it's very natural to use it to protect the operations within those systems itself without creating your own identity providers and without creating your own authentication systems. The way it works is this, by following way. You have the protected service, and you have ACS service namespace that you create for that service and for your users. And you exchange the secrets and periodically refresh them. That is a manual operation. And then you have a customer, which in this case is going to be your users, your application pages, your front end and billing and provisioning system. You define access control rules for a customer using tools such as ACM browser or through the portal itself. And you request access from the customer from ACS using claims. You map input claims to output claims based on access control rules. So ACS does it for you based on the rules that you defined. And it returns the access token, the output claims from step number 3 to the customer, which the customer uses further to access the protected resource. And that protected resource, without knowing much about customer itself, will look at the signed token that customer got from ACS And since the trust relationship between ACS and CIRRUS was established, it will give access to a specific operation to the customer based on the claim that was supplied in that token. There's also identity provider that could be used for that. So in our case, we're using a Windows Live ID identity provider, but as I said, ADFS 2.0 could be used as well. The main operations in access control service are still manual. You have to use tools like ACM browser if you're using a production version of ACS, or you have to use code samples that are provided as part of Fabric SDK if you're using Labs version of ACS, which is a free version. It's limited somewhat, but it's free for the development. The typical configuration for your application using ACS looks like the following. You specify the service namespace, you have client issuer key that you get from the tool, you have client issuer name, which is the name of your service consumer, and you have token policy key, which refers to a unique policy that you define, and you have ACS host name, which points in this case to the production version of access control service, and you specify what operation, what scope rather of operations it applies to. Windows Live ID is used pretty much everywhere in Windows Azure platform. It is used to access Windows Azure portal. It's used to access MockP portal. And it can be used by Windows Azure applications themselves. Since many of them are web-based, they have web roles, they could use Windows Live ID for web authentication. And the clients of cloud applications that are installed on desktop could use Windows Live ID as well with desktop authentication option. It is supported by ACS itself in a way that ACS actually understands Windows Live ID identity provider. Labs release that are currently that is currently being enrolled into rolled out on the Labs portion of AppFabric ACS has the Windows Live ID identity provider built in, so it's much easier to communicate with it. It is extremely easy to use for web authentication of cloud-based applications, and that's one of the reasons why cloud provisioning and billing system is using it as well as the means to authenticate users and administrators and operators. It is number one authentication mechanism for Windows Azure apps pretty much to date. There are a few considerations that have to be taken into account while using Windows Live ID to secure your applications. The application has to be registered with Windows Live ID first. So it's a manual operation, so every application has to get its own unique ID, and then appropriate changes to the configuration of the application have to be made in order to reflect that new application ID. So if one user is authenticated with Windows Live ID to one application, that token that he gets cannot necessarily be used in another application, because the token is tied not only to Windows Live ID, but to an application ID that was registered with Windows Live ID as well. So every application ID, every application will receive its own set of tokens, even for the same set of Live IDs. You cannot use one browser for development and testing if used in the application as well, because Windows Live ID is essentially cookie-based authentication for a web authentication option, and therefore when you open the page with Windows Azure portal and you authenticate with Windows Live ID in it, the same identity will be reused to access your application. And if you sign out of it from another browser instance, you will sign out from Azure portal page as well. Therefore, it's recommended to use multiple browser versions, for example, Firefox and Chrome, in addition to IE, or to use a private mode in IE8 to create to get another session, because private mode has different session and cookie store than the regular IE instance. The typical configuration for Wings Live ID looks like this. Application ID is included first, and then you have a secret for application that is provided upon registration that you have to include into the configuration file, and you also have to provide a security algorithm as well. There are a few other security mechanisms that are used in Windows Azure platform. There are access keys, which are essentially hashed keys that hash tokens that are provided to the developers which want to access certain resources in Azure, such as storage, programmatically. So in their application, they're actually including this access keys, or while making the REST API request, they're including these keys to get access to these resources. They can be handed over to the developers to directly access Azure resources. So if you're providing some kind of a service that separates your developers from Windows Azure, so that your developers will not need to have a direct billing relationship with Microsoft, they could still communicate with their resources, their application packages directly using these access keys, because many of the tools that are out there, they essentially need only access keys. Some tools need API certificates as well, and there's actually a way to provide multiple API certificates, ones that could be used by the provider itself and ones that could be used by the developer as well. So there's multiple ways to access Azure resources directly with this security mechanisms. Another security mechanism is SSL certificate, which is also X509 certificate, but it's used for a completely different purpose. Developers could upload the certificates into their Windows Azure portal or through the service provider to their Azure account, to essentially secure web application communication, to create an HTTPS connection with Azure WebRoll. So even though it's also X509 certificate, it has its own store in Windows Azure, and it's not used to operate Windows Azure, it's used to operate, to create rather, HTTPS connections with your web application. And now I'm going to show the CVV, Cloud Provisioning and Billing System 1.0 itself, which, as we mentioned, is an open source effort. You can get access to it over CodePlex. So I'm going to share my desktop here and show how it looks like. So this is essentially a user interface of this system. I'm going to use all three browsers here. So this one is Firefox. I'm going to show you how it looks like from the perspective of the developer first, and then I'm going to show you the administrative portion as well. So when the user comes into cloud provisioning and billing, which I'm showing here deployed locally, he or she sees the simple page where the actual package could be selected. And those packages are not actually Windows Azure packages. Those are described in the Windows Azure terms by the service provider itself. And service provider can obviously add its own value-add services in each of these packages. And when I click on this package, I essentially will be asked for subscription details on each one. So since I already have an account here, I'm just going to log in as one of my developer users, and it is using Windows Live ID authentication. I'm going to retype that URL here again and refresh my previous session. And I'm going to provide one of my user accounts. Again, Yahoo accounts are supported as well in Windows Live ID. Live.com accounts and Hotmail accounts are all supported, which is a good thing. And I see that I have subscribed to one of the packages, which is called Advanced. It has hosted services with Windows Azure Compute resource and storage account, Windows Azure Storage. It doesn't have SQL Azure, though, and it doesn't have App Fabric as well. So just for simplicity's sake, I'm going to show you how it looks like. I've just subscribed to it, so there's nothing in it, literally. So there's just a blank hosted service and storage account. And what happens when I click this, essentially the cloud provisioning and billing system starts to communicate with Windows Azure portal itself, and it's using its own API certificates, not the developer API certificates yet. And it's communicating with developers' packages that it deployed on behalf of the developer itself. Since it's a completely fresh subscription, there's nothing there. So staging and production, as you used to see it in the Windows Azure portal, they're completely empty right now. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to deploy a simple cloud service package that I pre-built before. And I'm going to give it a simple name. I'm going to upload it. And let's see what happens. I'm also going to show you another view of this account from the Windows Azure portal perspective. So the developers of CPB, the users of CPB do not have to have access to this portal at all if they have access to CPB itself. And this system is essentially something that they need to use on an exclusive basis. They do not necessarily need to use any other system in order to operate their subscriptions. Let me quickly check what is going on with the service. So there is service. Oh, okay, so it's refreshing the page. So as you can see now, it's deploying the package into my staging environment. And if I switch to this view, so the Windows Azure portal view itself, it would show the changes here as well. So as you can see, staging here, even though I haven't done any of the operations here yet, it is showing me that this package is now has now been deployed, but it's in the stopped phase. So I can essentially run it from here. And let's just, for fairness sake, run it from this portal and see what happens in our CPB system. As you can see, it's also showing the status now changed to starting. So we are starting this operation, and without any additional refreshes, the CPB is actually showing us the new status for this package. So while it's initializing, I'm going to show you how it looks like from the administrator perspective. This is administrative screen, and I have my Live ID administrative user signed on. Administrator has access to the queue of events. Administrator can reconfigure the packages that were showing on the homepage for the users. And it can monitor various parts of the application, such as mailing service, the notifications that are being mailed on behalf of the system to the developers. And it can show multiple Azure operations, errors and successes and so on. And it can also upload and view the bills. So let's view some of the bills that we got from MockP portal and upload it into this system and see how they look like in this system. So in this particular case, developer account at hotmail.com account that belongs to one of the developers received a new bill from Mockbee Portal from the period of April 1st to May 1st. And it's a bill for $57.75. As we can see here, there are some Windows Azure charges, data transfer charges, SQL Azure charges, and daily usage charges that are listed here. And there's actually multiple pages. So this is the bill that the administrator sees. It is not the bill that a developer will receive, because as service provider is providing some additional services, value-add services on top of Windows Azure platform, it can add charges and commissions to this bill and deliver completely different charges to the developer, probably simplified somewhat, not as verbose as this, but those are going to be completely different charges with value-add commission fees added. And we can also go back and add the bill. We can create completely new period for the bill. We already have this period here. And we can see to which accounts we can upload these bills. And we essentially can choose the new bills from our system and select specific files that we got from Mockbee portal. So Mockbee can actually export them to CSV, comma separated valid files in Excel format. And that's what we would upload here. Anyway, coming back to our system. So now it is showing that this role is, the service status is running, and the web role init is still initializing. So if we look at the portal, and here it is. It is initializing. So later on, when we need to give access to the developer to this role, we essentially give access to the access keys, and we upload API certificate that a developer provides to us. But the storage itself can be accessed right away because the storage is already there. It doesn't have to be initialized. It essentially can be accessed by using primary access key or secondary access key and the endpoint URLs. So that's what the developers would type in their third-party tools such as Windows Azure Management MMC or Cerebrata Cloud Studio or Windows Azure Explorer and so on. And they would be able to access their storage from their clients without even going to Windows Azure portal using these keys. And if they want to access, say, their service, they could do it by providing the API certificate, additional API certificate using this page. Going back to the presentation itself.
Thank you, Alex.
I want to quickly summarize the points on how to use various security mechanisms in creating provisioning and billing systems. So to provision developer packages and data, the provider uses Live ID to access portal and API certificates of its own to invoke operations on Windows Azure Service Management API. And to monitor and manage package data, the provider continues to use API certificates. And to access bills and make payments, it uses Live ID to access Mockbee and download the bills and upload them into the provisioning system. And so that they can be recalculated for specific developers. And a developer is actually using mostly Live ID to access a CPB system, but it can also use API certificates and the access keys to directly access the resources. There's clear separation of concerns here. which simplifies the development quite a bit if you employ this kind of techniques in your own applications. And the providers can concentrate on value adds, and developers can concentrate on the application itself. That's all to you, Dan.
Thank you very much, Alex. Appreciate it.
Okay, any questions?
Yes, Alex, could you tell us, please, who is the target audience for this solution?
Well, the target audience for this solution is essentially the companies that want to either resell Windows Azure resources to their own customers, such as service providers, or the big ISVs, which are building the applications that are so complex that they should be customized by their customers, such as enterprise customers that want to rebrand the application to add additional components to it or to remove certain components from the application before it's deployed to the cloud. And by separating Windows Azure from the end users, these companies are actually able to provide additional services on top of Windows Azure infrastructure and on top of provisioning and billing workflows that Windows Azure provides. And therefore, they're able to provide value-add services and possibly even charge additional money for the applications that they create from their customers for those value-add services. And so the users are twofold, service providers and big ISVs.
Thank you. How would people go about finding more about this particular project? What does this project consist of?
The project is located at cpb.codeplex.com. CPB stands for Cloud Provisioning and Billing. It is an open source project that was published by Microsoft some time ago, and it is used by service providers to resell Azure resources as we speak. It's provided with full source code under new BSD license, so it's free to use for commercial purposes. And anybody can download it and modify the source code and rebrand it and add additional components.
How are all the different security components connected together to provide one coherent security and privacy picture? Can you kind of give us a short summary to wrap up our presentation?
Well, basically, this slide provides the summary of entire workflow, how the security mechanisms are used together. There's clear separation of concerns here. The developers are mostly using Windows Live IDs, and then they also use access keys and API certificates only to monitor and manage the package data. But the provider, offloading a lot of these manual operations from the shoulders of the developers, is using multiple mechanisms. So initially, they use Live ID to log into the portal and upload the API certificates, and they continue to use this API certificates throughout to manage the packages in Windows Azure portal programmatically. And they also use Windows Live ID to access MockP portal and download the bills and upload the bills into the billing system so they can be recalculated for the users. Offloading and separating these tasks, tedious tasks, from the developer, service provider can concentrate on providing value-add services on top of this workflow, maybe simplifying that workflow a little bit for the developer. And the developer can concentrate on the application itself.
Thank you, Alex. It's been a pleasure hearing you talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Daniel.